Welcome to the Big Picture Social Emotional Learning Podcast. My name is Nene White, and in this episode, I am once again honored to have a conversation with Frances Wardle, author of Oh Boy, Strategies for Teaching Young Boys in Early Childhood. In this, our second conversation about his book, Frances deepens our understanding about how and why the specific needs of young boys in early childhood environments must be appreciated and must be appropriately addressed. Frances also provides practical advice for bringing men into young boys' learning environments in ways that fulfill everyone's goodness of fit requirements. Frances does not in any way disparage the current quality of most early childhood learning environments, with their emphasis on nurturing and the gentler side of raising kids. He is simply and very clearly expanding our awareness, helping us to move past some of the unconscious biases most of us are probably carrying into those environments and into our work with young boys. His voice is strong and clear. And in this episode, Frances shines a bright light on the many ways that men can be much more meaningfully included in young boys' social, emotional, and life skills development. All right. So today we have the grand and happy pleasure of bringing Frances Wardle back again for part two of his incredible book, Oh Boy. Because last time, we neglected to cover one of the most important chapters. Of course, they're all important, but the one about bringing men into early childhood programs. So first of all, welcome, Frances.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Yes. And so in your book, you refer to the goodness of fit several times. I love that concept. And I love how you showed that the goodness of fit framework is especially relevant to bringing men into early childhood educational environments. So now, please share your thoughts on that subject.
Yeah, the idea of goodness of fit is that we all develop within a context of social and physical environments. And the more there is a match between how we develop, how we learn, how we grow, and those environments, the more effective our learning and growth occurs.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It makes inimitable sense.
Yes.
The dilemma is that our early childhood programs, from no fault of their own, match the needs of girls far more than they do the needs of boys. Mm-hmm. They are what I call a female culture. And again, female cultures are wonderful. They're supportive, they're nurturing, they're creative, all sorts of things. But yeah, they don't provide that piece that little boys really need. Yeah. That piece has to do with physical activity, large motor activity, a certain amount of mess, a certain amount of confusion, a certain amount of noise, a certain amount of going out in the bush and just bushwhacking your way through the brambles and things like that. And the way that is, the only way we can do that is by bringing men into the field. And so the challenge is, how do we do that? And there are, it seems to me, multiple ways to do that. It's not just teachers, although we do desperately need more male teachers. But there are two other areas that we need to work on to get more men into the field. One is members of the family. And I don't mean just fathers, but also boyfriends and uncles and grandfathers and older brothers. Any man in the family who can provide the modeling and provide the activities for young boys in the program. One of the things I did when I was in Head Start was I brought in workbenches and carpentry tools and went to the local hardware store and picked up pieces of wood and ended up getting a lot of men from programs, fathers and uncles and grandparents to come in and show the kids how to work on the woodwork bench. And this is a classic example of, we need to provide activities and we need to provide environments where men feel friendly. Yes. And men in many cases do not feel friendly in our early childhood programs.
Sure.
You walk into a program and there are no magazines about cars and sports and things that men like. You walk into the classroom and all the pictures of the parents are, or teachers are, women and children. There just isn't a sense that we belong.
Right.
So we need to make a huge effort to move the paradigm over to say, we expect men to be engaged in our programs. The other group of men that we need to be attracting are volunteers.
Yeah.
At every level, one main level, of course, here is in the classroom, on field trips, on the playground, helping create gardens, all those kind of things. Seniors, scouts, other people in the community do volunteer work. We need to access them. A whole group of people also will be university students who have to do internships for their degrees, and this is getting to be very popular. In my community college, there's a lot of community service requirements now. We need to access those requirements. But the other place that we need to do it is, if we have any advisory boards, we need to get high-profile men from the community on those boards so they can show men in the community that this is an honorable thing to do.
Yes, beautiful. And what I love is the long-term picture, because it's honorable and it's going to have long-term effects for these young little boys.
And it has effects beyond simply what we term modeling. It has effects in that I just talked to was on a local radio show, and it was interesting because this actually was a woman, but she was viewing the program of her grandchild from a male point of view. And she said, I looked at all these books and said, if I was a little boy, I wouldn't read any of these books. They're not interesting to me.
Right, right. Right.
So the main issue is that we change the environment because men see the world differently. That's simply the way it is.
Right. That's the way it is.
I mean, one example is in dramatic play. I go to dramatic play, and you know they have the clothes, the women's clothes and the women's hats and the women's shoes, and they have dolls and they have cooking things to cook. They don't even have a damn barbecue.
Yeah.
Which is, when I was teaching kindergarten, I brought in hard hats, I brought in coats from firemen, I brought in hoses, and all the little boys ended up in the dramatic play area.
Of course. And what's magnificent is that these differences of boys and girls are so built right into them. It's just astounding. I think there's something in the thinking these days that, oh no, they're not just born like that. But do you want to speak on that at all?
Well, again, I think we can get into the weeds when we discuss, is it brain? Is it hormone? Is it culture?
Yep.
The bottom
yep.
line is it is.
Yeah.
And so that to make sure that boys don't fail or don't feel like failures, we simply have to have a paradigm shift to say to boys, it's okay to make noise. It's okay to be messy. It's okay to want to destroy things. It's okay to want to build things. That's part of who you are. And we're not to punish you, not to somehow say that's not appropriate, to compare you to Sarah and say, look, Sarah didn't knock down the tower. What's wrong with you?
Yes, yes. Absolutely. So sadly, there are quite a number of barriers to involving men in early childhood environments, including societal barriers. And some are conscious and maybe some are not so conscious. Do you want to help us think about that more clearly?
Yes. Most are not conscious. Most are bias that we're not aware of. When my children were young, I used to take them to the doctor and I used to take them to early childhood programs. And it was really interesting when I went to the doctor and he asked me for all the medical information and I didn't have it because I wasn't used to it.
Yeah.
He turned around and said, please bring your wife next time.
Oh.
And then when I'd go to the early childhood program or child care program with my wife and started talking to the teacher about one of our children, she would ignore me and just talk to my wife.
Then
finally, and this is the worst case in my view, when I actually worked for an early childhood company, And my boss was a woman, and I told my woman that I, my boss, the woman, that I needed to take time off to take my children to the doctor. She turned around and says, "Why do you want to do that? That's your wife's job."
Oh dear, right.
So we're not even encouraging men to get involved with their children in the schools, in the early childhood programs.
And that was a woman who said that to you.
Absolutely.
Yes. So just making the point that a lot of these barriers are not.
Not only was it a woman, it was a woman in an early childhood company.
Ouch. Yeah. Yeah. Ouch. So there are different parenting styles.
Yes.
That you discussed in that final chapter, which was so rich with practical insights. But do you want to talk about that for a while?
Well, I think that we need to help parents engage with their children, particularly men, since we're looking at this. And men often have not been taught how to be nurturing, how to involve their children in decision-making, how to help them control their behavior. Men tend to be over authoritarian, which is one of the learning styles.
Yes.
And we need to help men understand that you don't need to be authoritarian. Again, society often thinks the men need to enforce the rules, the men need to, you know, wait till daddy comes home approach. And we need to get away from that and help men understand that it's totally appropriate to be nurturing. It's totally appropriate for them to be creative, for them to sit in the rocking chair and pick up the doll and rock the doll and feed the doll, all those kind of things.
I think there's nothing more beautiful than a man that knows how to be with children,
yes,
young children, especially when you see how it affects the children and the boys most especially.
Actually, parenthetically, my wife said she married me because she saw how I worked with children.
I believe it. I believe it. Absolutely. So then you have something in this final chapter about surveying men on how they want to be involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Give us some suggestions for that.
Well, my initial suggestion is when programs, be they school programs, Head Start programs, private childcare programs, any program that serves children 0 to 8 years old, when they register the child for the program, there should be a place on that form itself to say, to ask the parents, how would you like to be involved, and to separate that out by gender, mothers, uh-huh, and fathers, or uncles, aunts, grandparents, and then give them some choices. Would you like to be involved in the playground? Would you like to be involved in field trips?
Yeah.
But then open end, what are things you can contribute to our program?
Right.
And
yeah,
start right there. And then any contact the program has with the parents, for instance, the teacher conference, student teacher conference, first of all, do all you can to get men from the family to that conference.
Yeah.
And then ask them, how would you like to be involved with your child in the program?
Yes.
And provide lots of opportunities, not simply in the classroom, but, you know, are there skills you have that you could bring maybe to the playground? Maybe you're in construction, you can bring some construction materials and we can build a fort in the playground.
Oh.
You come from a research program and you have solar cars and you have model solar cars and you're going to have kids build solar cars on the workbench and then race the solar cars out on the playground. I mean, there's all sorts of things if we're just open-ended enough to understand that every person in that program has gifts and talents that they can contribute to the program.
Exactly, exactly. Do you have any stories about contrasting programs that didn't have much male involvement and then they got male involvement and the change in the kids? Is that anything you could share with us?
Absolutely. As I said, when I taught kindergarten in Pennsylvania for a year,
yeah,
and when I originally went to the program, the boys did not engage in the dramatic play area at all. They simply avoided the dramatic play area. The girls did not engage in the woodwork. They had a wonderful woodwork facility for a variety of reasons, but the girls really didn't do woodwork. Yeah. So for the woodwork, I introduced paints, I introduced yarn, I introduced buttons and zippers and things that they could add to their constructions. And then the girls flocked over there. With a dramatic play, I did two things. One is I introduced, as I said, hard hats, fireman's hats, fireman's coats. And then I also introduced tools and old typewriters, old telephones, things that boys just love to break apart and all those kinds of things. And then we had as many boys as girls in dramatic play.
Happy boys and girls.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's gorgeous. What else do we want to share with our listeners?
Well, I think we need to back off and understand that it's not only the micro, what I call the micro things we can do in the classroom.
Yes.
Things we can do to encourage men, things we can do to try to encourage men in the actual profession.
Yes.
But it's, we also have to look at the higher level. We need to impact state departments of education. We need to impact schools. We need to impact people who have got everything wrong. What they've got wrong is this idea that education is a ladder and that you start at the bottom rung. And if for some reason you have trouble with the bottom rung, you'll never make it to the top of the ladder. Well, that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
Right.
And what that has done is means we end up focusing on assessments. We end up focusing on teaching discrete academic skills. We end up saying kids are failures if they're not reading in kindergarten. And this tends to be worse for boys and girls because, as we've said, boys tend to be delayed in emotional regulation, in verbal skills, and in certain academic skills. And the only way to change that is to, we have to change the top of the system as well. We have to insist that the first 8 years of life, of the first 8 years of early childhood is not the first rungs of a ladder. It's not school preparation. It's setting the foundation for life, which is play, which is hands-on learning, which is exploring the environment, which is learning social skills, which is learning human relations, all those basic fundamental constructs that are needed before children are successful in school.
Yes. So that's a very big picture.
Yes.
What can people do, just one person at a time?
They can insist every time somebody says, well, we need assessments, or every time somebody says, your child needs to be put in special education because they're not ready to read at age 6 years old, or your child has ADHD. When they don't, they're simply typically a typical boy running around. We need to say, no, this is not appropriate. This is simply not what is appropriate for young children up to age 8 years old. We need to allow them to run. We need to allow them to use their full body to learn, all those kind of things. We need to start standing up and saying, the experts don't know what they're talking about.
Oh, hallelujah, brother. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we need to be very assertive.
Very good. And just in a very solid understanding that this is not just being overly protective of your child. It's really having the big picture understanding about child development. Each child develops as an individual. And like you, tell us your story again.
I grew up on a farm and I absolutely loved the outdoors. I loved cycling. I loved picking flowers. I loved hiking. But I struggled to read. And in fact, I didn't read until early adolescence.
But what, like how old?
12, 13 years old.
Oh my gosh. Okay, go on.
But what enabled me to be successful was, and actually transferred into my writing, was that I was good in art and good in woodwork and good in dance, and my school and my parents said, that's fine. The other stuff will come later, and it did.
Right. I did, from our former conversation on this podcast. One of the people that wrote in questions asked me about what's your familiarity with that whole Waldorf approach to not rush reading? What do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I have quite a familiarity with Waldorf, and mm-hmm. I like many things about Waldorf. However, there are certain things that don't make any sense. Mm-hmm. For instance, it says don't even start teaching children reading until their adult teeth come in. Well, there's no relationship with adult teeth and reading. If a child's ready to read, they're ready to read. If they're not, it has nothing to do with teeth.
I didn't know.
Yes, but they do. I mean, they do. They also limit technology for young children, which I think is also important.
Okay. Yeah.
And as we talked about before, they have a great, both Waldorf and Montessori focus a lot, and actually True Froebel, who is the father of kindergarten, have a strong emphasis on the arts. So you know how important I think the arts are.
Exactly. So can you, I mean, I could, but I want to hear how you would tie this all in to young boys' social, emotional learning and development.
Well, yes. I mean, this is the crux of the issue, is young mm-hmm. boys tend to be delayed in emotional regulation, tend to be delayed in social skill development, tend to be delayed in literacy. And the response to the traditional programs is to penalize them, to punish them, to say, put them in special education, to expect them to learn these basic academic skills, and often to not help them develop in the very areas where they need the most development, which is social and emotional. So not only are they struggling socially and emotionally, but we tend to take that development away from them.
Yeah.
They tend to be taken out of the art activities so that they can learn math, or taken and not allowed to play on the playground because they engage in inappropriate physical behavior inside, which in general, as I say, usually isn't inappropriate at all.
Right.
So not only are we not developing their social and emotional development at their age, but we're penalizing them because they are naturally delayed compared to girls.
Pretty much backwards, in other
Yes,
words.
Totally backwards.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you. I mean, your book, I really have to send you a picture of all of the place marks that I've put in your book.
Okay.
It is so rich with important insights that just, I think when anybody would read your book, they would say, oh, of course. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Wow,
right.
I knew that, you know.
Yeah.
But to read it in your book and see it, and then with all of the incredible research that you include with it, it's just like, okay, now we know. Now we need to act.
Also, I encourage both teachers and parents who are struggling with the powers that be to just take a book with them when they go to the conference and put it down there and says, Dr. Wardle says.
Very good. Very good. Wonderful. And then the next time you and I speak together on this podcast, we're going to talk about how teachers and parents and people involved with early childhood education can move forward past all the barriers that seem to be there against really creative and appropriate programs. So we will do that next time.
Great. Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, Francis. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And just as with our first conversation, Francis invites you to ask him any questions you'd like. I promise his interest in your questions, concerns, and your challenges could not be more sincere. Just head over to the Big Picture Social Emotional Learning Podcast Facebook page, like it, and post your question. Or you can just send an email to me at ask@kidsownwisdom.com. Again, the title of Francis's book is Oh Boy, Strategies for Teaching Boys in Early Childhood. You can find it at childcareexchange.com/catalog. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being one of those noble teachers who are committed to never-ending, lifelong learning.
and to the healthy social-emotional learning and development of today's youngest learners. I am forever respectful for you and grateful to you.